And we're back here with you on a Thursday. It's Jimmy B and TC, 1700 KBGG. And right now, time to talk a little Hawkeyes. Our man is Derek Peck from Hawkeye Heaven. Our conversations with Derek presented by Murphy Tower Service, their apprenticeship program going on right now. Earn while you learn with Murphy Tower Service. Also, some full-time jobs available as well. Go to their website, murphytower.com, for all the details. DP, we talk again, and well, a week ago, we were maybe optimistic before the Illinois game. Here we are, a loss to Rutgers, and the mood is not very good right now in Hawkeye Land.
Gentlemen, thanks for having me on. I think we're probably in a better mood than Fran is today. That was probably, can you guys think of a worse loss in his tenure? I mean, I don't know. That was a tough one. That's a subpar team in the Big Ten, and they got whooped from the tip off. So, I'm running out of ways to explain this season, but yeah. It's definitely not going very well for them. And their defense is atrocious. They're not communicating. They're not giving that good of an effort. And Jimmy B, I remember you made the point last week. You got to start questioning whether or not they're even listening to Fran anymore. So. It's been quite the train wreck.
Let me just follow up with what you said there. It turned into a dunkathon. I mean, I was ready with my numbers to start judging at the end of the game. I know the game is over, but still people say, well, why did you rub it in their nose? They're not rubbing it in your nose. It's because you're supposed to stop them.
Right.
And they were disinterested, Derek, in even attempting to do that. I was dumbfounded by the last couple of minutes.
Yeah, and I'll be honest with you, I turned it off by that point.
Okay.
So I didn't even see that. I don't know what the deal is. This is a team that I thought, and I think maybe I'm crazy, but I think most Hawkeye fans had pretty high expectations going into this season. I think they were at least a top six team, maybe top seven team in the Big Ten. But it's starting to look like they may be one of the worst teams in the Big Ten. And I'm not one of the naysayers out there saying it's time to fire Fran. I think that's a little bit much. It's year eight. He's done a heck of a job year after year, and I don't think you have one really bad season. I don't think you can necessarily make the argument that he should be gone, especially when you look at the players that he has coming in the future. But I don't know what it is. They definitely don't seem like. I mean, and that's not just the last couple of minutes of the game. That's the whole game. They just don't seem engaged. Nicholas Baer, he's a guy who earned his minutes by playing. By going 110%, and you can, I can tell while watching that he's trying harder than all the other guys, but still, when your teammates aren't giving their maximum effort, it's contagious, and even it's even become noticeable with Baer, and that's a kid who earned his minutes by working his butt off. So I don't know. I don't know what it is. They definitely it's more athleticism at point guard and. And their defense in the post has just been atrocious.
It's crazy with the team we thought they were going to have. Just how bad it is. It's not. Oh, this team's not going to make the NCAA tournament. We're a little off, and off they go to the NIT. There's little hope of being in the NIT, and this is going to be a team without a postseason. And now you wonder about the future. And I've started going that way, Derek. I'm a Fran McCaffrey backer. I believe in this guy. I believe in what he's built, and I believe that he should not be on a hot seat by any means. But you just go through and you look at the development of some of the younger guys, and there just hasn't been a whole lot of improvement, not just with the upperclassmen, with Dom Ewell relegated to the end of the bench, and we Brady Ellingson doesn't have a whole lot there. But some of the regression we've seen even out of the young guys, Jordan Bohannon, his numbers are up a little bit and he's shooting well, but he was getting 8, 9, 10 assists towards the end of the season. That has fallen back. Is it just Peter Jock, or is there something else happened there? Cordell Pemsel looks to be a shell of himself, and you can go on and on through this roster. you see regression, and that's something, the more that I think of it, makes me concerned of a possible improvement out of this squad, as these guys are taking steps back throughout their career.
I agree. Yeah, I agree. You know, and I would say two things. One, you know, I just got done saying, similar to what you said, that I don't think Francie should be hot, but I think it should start to get warm. I mean, I think next season will be key for my, at least for me, when making a judgment. I like what he has coming in, but you know, he's just really struggled to land an all around point guard, a guy who's good at a little bit of everything. I mean, I just think about the point guards they've had in the past, and you know, you got this year, you've got Jordan Bohannon, and he's a heck of a shooter. Like you said, last year he was really able to distribute the ball well, and I don't know. I mean, I think you definitely have to attribute the loss of Jock. You know, certainly that's making things more difficult for Bohannon in terms of, you know, just the floor being opened up and having more spacing, and you know, opening up the floor makes it easier to get those passes to the interior, and then, you know, it's just the spacing in general makes the offense run more smoothly. But the other thing I would mention is just leadership. I mean, I don't see who's leading them out on the court. I can't point to anybody. I mean, I don't know who gathers the guys together and says enough is enough. Who's I don't know who they're looking for. You know, I don't know who they're looking at. It's just, you know, and I didn't. The funny thing is I didn't really think Jock was that guy last year either, though. So I'm not sure what it is, but they're just not playing as a team. Somebody needs to step up. And my concern about the future, you know, when I say that Francie should be getting warm, my concern is he's got some talented players coming in. You know, I'm really high on some of them. We've talked about that, but I still don't see a point guard. So, that still has me concerned.
Having a conversation right now with Derek Peck here on the Big Talker 1700. All right, let me just kind of follow up on who the leader is. And as I said, let me follow up on who the leader is. And as I said, they have none. Zero. There is nobody there, Derek, to take control of this team when they are out on the court. And it's amazing to me. And I don't know if it's a personality problem or what, but they don't have somebody there to get the guys motivated to go to their spots where they're supposed to go and play. And it seems that they will have a couple of minutes of really solid basketball. And they had a couple of those last night in the second half and made a run, but it wasn't good enough because their defense again let them down. And then when Rutgers made a couple of shots, they all just sank their heads and just sort of cried themselves to sleep. It was a despicable display, especially in the last 4 minutes of the game. And I think you're right. Somebody is going to have to be the leader on that team when they are on the court, and they don't have a person to do that at all.
Yeah, you know, and that, it almost makes me you know, eager for the days of a Reggie Evans or I was just thinking the other day, even if they had a Zach McCabe, right? Like, they've got
Give me
nobody.
Mike Gesell. Give me Mike Gesell.
I mean,
anybody.
Somebody on the court that looks like he cares. I mean, you know, I remember that the cheap shot that McCabe took on the, you know, when he threw that player on the sideline. You know, I don't want to see that type of stuff. I would never call for that type of stuff. But you can never make the argument that Zach McCabe didn't care. You know, he played his tail off, and he wore his emotions on his sleeve, and sometimes that came out poorly. But right now, these guys just don't look like they care. And that's more disappointing to me as a fan than, you know, a group of guys that are trying really hard and occasionally cross the line. Because right now, it just doesn't look like they're trying. And I don't remember which game it was. It was a couple games ago, but I remember the announcers talking about how it seems like Iowa just has a team filled with a bunch of nice guys. And you know, I think that kind of goes right along with what we're talking about. It just seems like they get along with each other. It doesn't seem like there's necessarily a team chemistry issue as far as relationships go, but they're definitely lacking leadership, and they're lacking that want to and that competitive drive that somebody needs to just step up and grab a hold of their teammates and tell them that enough is enough with this type of lack of effort that we've seen.
They need an a-hole. You know,
yeah,
they do. They need a guy and maybe if there is some guys that are transferring out or encouraged to look on, that's what you bring in. Bring somebody to upset the chemistry a little bit. Find somebody. I don't think you're going to find, you know, an all Big Ten guy that's going to be a grad transfer that's going to come in. But find somebody that, you know what, if guys are lagging, they're going to talk. They're going to call them out on it. And because they don't, you're right, Derek. It's a bunch of really nice kids. They're a nice kids. I'm the same way with you. I don't see any chemistry issues. You don't see infighting that a lot of times you see in seasons like this, where expectations are out of whack with the way they're actually playing. You don't see that. So maybe it just needs a little chemistry shakeup here. And anybody that's seen Joe Weiskamp play, he's not a very demonstrative kid. I've heard the same thing for C.J. Frederick coming in, the other freshman for next year. Maybe that's the route to go. Go out there and find the tough guy, the guy that's going to call these guys out and change this chemistry to get them going.
Shake it up. Yeah, you know, and that's be a little bit more like Fran, right?
Yes.
I mean, that's what
they don't embody what he is. That's the crazy part.
Well, and that's what it's a really interesting dynamic there. And it's almost like because there's that distance between the two personalities, maybe they're not meshing very well, and it's almost like Fran, because of how competitive Fran is, it's almost like, you know, he just can't relate to these types of players. I mean, it's like it's bewildering at times, and you know, certainly there's some X's and O's and you know, some talent issues at certain positions and ability issues, but the chemistry thing and finding that type of an a-hole, like you said. I mean, I think that's as key as anything else is for this thing to turn around and for them to have a better year next year, because I mean, they need to have some fire.
They do. They absolutely.
Yeah, they do. Yeah, let me just finish up and follow here, because we won't get to talk to you until next week. So they get now Purdue, right now playing the best basketball of any team in the Big Ten. It's a morning game at 11 a.m., but they are going to make it the Chris Street game as well, and that honor will take place prior to the game. Is that going to have that much impact, do you think, for Iowa? Or is Purdue right now just playing so well that they should throttle the Hawks at Carver?
Well, you know, that's a heck of a transition, Jimmy B. I mean, what we were just talking about, you know, and I'm not.
Yeah.
They need some Chris Street. They need a guy that's going to play like that. And what better way to remind them of that than this type of a game? And boy, they're sure as heck going to need it, because Purdue is one of the best teams in the country. So, you know, I think from the outside looking in, this looks like it's going to be a blowout. But Hawkeye fans, you know, we know very well that just when you think you've got something figured out, they go out and they knock off a team like Purdue. I mean, who knows, they've put together some good minutes of basketball, but other than that, they've been a complete train wreck. So I'm going to expect the worst, and I'm guessing it'll be a blowout. But I'm going to hope for the best. And you know, when you're honoring Chris Street, it's fair to at least at the bare minimum expect for those guys to go out on the court and play their butts off.
Hawkeye Heaven, Derek Peck joining us here. Derek, you mentioned Chris Street in the game Saturday, honoring him 25 years since he passed. If you can, I know you're about my age, so take us back and your memories of that fateful night.
Oh, geez. I was young, so it wasn't, I remember my mom talking about it more than anything, you know, but it wasn't until later on where I really fully grasped the significance of what had happened. And I remember hearing stories from people that were in Iowa City, and, you know, this was when I was in college, and hearing these stories was when I was in college, but back then, the night that it happened, I remember people saying that, you know, how crazy the bars are in Iowa City, right? Well, it was, you could hear a pin drop. That people got up on the bars and were making announcements and, you know, told the whole crowd what had happened, and everybody just left because it was that significant. And I wasn't old enough to grasp that, but I think that just goes to show you how much that kid meant to the state of Iowa, and how tough that news was for Hawkeye fans.
No doubt. Hey, Derek, as always, good catching up with you. We'll do it again next week, and hopefully something more positive to talk about next week.
Agreed, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Derek Peck joining us here, DP, as we talk Hawkeyes with him on Thursdays, presented by Murphy Tower Service. We'll take the break. We got more to come here in this hour. Ken Silverstein will stop by. We're going to talk a little Big Ten with him and a few other things. Little Cleveland Cavaliers. He's covering the Cavs tonight, who have lost 8 out of 10. We'll get into that as well. As we take you up until 6 o'clock tonight, it's Jimmy B and TC on 1700.
And welcome back, everybody. We finish up with a conversation with Big Ten Conference insider Ken Silverstein as we take you to the top of the hour. Kenny, hello to you. And let's start first with what we witnessed last night. Iowa sucking major pond water on the road at Rutgers. How the mighty have fallen. What in the wide, wide world of sport is going on when you look at it from your vantage point?
Well, it's not good. First of all, Rutgers is not very good. I've seen them now the last couple of games against Ohio State and then obviously Iowa. And they are the dregs of the Big Ten in football, arguably. Illinois, obviously, football is awful also. Purdue has rebounded nicely. So you can make an argument that right now Rutgers and Illinois are the worst in football, and you can make a one hell of an argument that Rutgers now, I guess along with Illinois, status quo, is the same with hoops. So when you lose the Rutgers, whether it's at your place, which would be worse, or even there in Piscataway, is not something that you should stick your chest out and go, I'm real proud of this. No. And, you know, look, if you lose by a fluky call, if you lose because the ball, you know, rims in and out, that's one thing. But when you get beat by the number they got beat by, Fran's got a major mountain to climb here. And whether it's recruiting or lack thereof, whether it's the kids are just not getting the message, which at this point could be part of the equation likewise. Whatever the issues are, simply put, it ain't working. And somebody has to look at it and go, why isn't it working? This is on a down year in the Big Ten, okay, where there's really, I don't care what Ohio State's doing, put them off the side. It's a Purdue, Michigan State, Purdue league. Okay, everybody else is, I don't care what their numbers are, they're not that good. Okay, this is an awful year for the Big Ten. And then when you add in that Iowa's having even a worse year than they should be having, considering how good or how average or how whatever this league is, it compounds it. It makes it even worse. Because if the league was 5-6 deep of really, really good teams, okay, then you might say, well, we're losing to really good teams, and, you know, that's why we're having a down year. But when the league is bad, and then you're having an awful season itself, it makes it even worse. Does that make sense?
It does. It does, and I think that's another frustrating component here is that Ken, you know, Iowa's had plenty of winnable games, and the effort against Rutgers last night, getting shot out of the gym against Rutgers, losing home games to Michigan, Ohio State. Both those teams are decent, but coming into the year, those were games that they were expected to win. So last year was expected to be a rebuilding year. Peter Jack had a great year. Still a rebuilding year. They're one win away from being an NCAA tournament team. If they beat Indiana in the Big Ten tournament, they would have been in the NCAA tournament. This year has been a disappointment, but do you ratchet up the heat here, realizing where Iowa came from, what Fran McCaffrey came into with the basketball program, and just really the hierarchy of the Big Ten, where they fit? Expectations, are they a little bit out of whack with people thinking that Iowa should be a top four contender every single year?
Well, I don't know about top four, but they should be definitely in the top six or seven for sure, and probably some years, you're right, top four. I think it just depends on injuries and whether he hits on a kid or two and, you know, what everybody else is doing league-wide. Again, not to be redundant here, I just think it's magnified because the league is down. And, you know, even the Illinois game, I mean, that was excruciating just to watch that. Last night, I need a thesaurus to come up with the right word. Losing a game like that by the number they lost in regards to a terrible Rutgers team. And Rutgers is really bad. I mean, they got one kid who's athletic and scored a bunch last night for Rutgers. But, I mean, that program's got many years to go before they become a top four team. We're talking about Rutgers here. So it's a very depressing loss that when you enter the season and you look at your schedule, fan or no fan, you look at the Rutgers game and you go, okay, it's in Piscataway. All right, they'll play hard, but, you know, Iowa should win this game and then move on. So, you know, when you just look at the numbers and you look at the standings and you look at 10-10 and you look at 1-6 and you look at Illinois, obviously in the basement at 0-6, and then you look northerly and you look at Northwestern, who, you know, you look at what happened last year with the NCAA berth, first time ever, and you look at a loss last night at home to Ohio State, and you look at Rutgers at 2-5, and everybody else north of them, it doesn't look real good. I mean, it just, you know, you say, well, maybe they can get on a spurt and win a couple in a row and get a little bit of confidence. I guess it could happen, but it could be just one of these years where it just doesn't work. And then you have to say to yourselves, okay, what do we have here after all the dust has settled? You know, do we have to improve our recruiting base? What do we have to do to rebound from what's going to be obviously a really down and depressing season for the Hawkeyes? So there's still obviously a bunch of games to play. Obviously the NCAA is not an option at this point unless you believe in miracles, and I don't think you guys do, and I doubt the fan base does. So at this point, you just want to see improvement. You want to see them win some games, save the season, and you know, and what now at 1-6? I mean, could they win 6 conference games, which is 5 more? I don't know. You know, I have to look at the schedule and see if there are 5 more winnable games at this point. You know, I don't know. Trey, are there 5 more winnable games in conference play?
I think there is. They can beat Wisconsin at home. They can beat Minnesota at home. They can beat Indiana Northwestern. Those are both home games. They go to Nebraska. They go to Penn State. Mm-hmm. They're all winnable games. They go to Minnesota, who is a dumpster fire themselves right now.
This
team, something seems off with them. Ken, you know this team has some talent on it. You know, Jordan Bohannon, maybe he's miscast as a point guard and he needs some help, but that kid can shoot it. Tyler Cook is as athletic as anybody that they've had go through the building in 30 years. They have talent on this team, but the parts just aren't matching right now. And I think that's the frustrating part for Iowa fans, and it's the frustrating part for Fran McCaffrey and his staff. There's talent on this team. It's just, it's not constructed well.
Well, and again, I think some fans would look at it and blame the coaching staff and will say, hey, it's up to you guys to figure out, you know, who the starting five should be, who should be 6, 7, 8, maybe 9, you know, your bench guys, your support stuff. At this point, you're right, it's just not working. And whether he has to juggle the lineups even more, maybe sit somebody to send a message, you know, whatever. I mean, there are things you can try, but again, there's just some years where it just doesn't work, and it happens to most programs unless you are, you know, just so loaded talent-wise that you're able to compensate because you just have future NBA players all over the place and you're able to, you know, work it out. But for most squads, you know, you're just going to hit a year where, you know, it just doesn't work, and it's not simplistic in trying to find the answer. What you want to make sure, and this is what happened to Ohio State basketball the last couple of years, is that it doesn't become a 2 or 3 year run, okay, where you're just in a quagmire. You have a coach that, in this case, Thad Matta, who, due to health reasons and missing on kids and some kids who think they're better than they are, and it's just all kinds of different. What you just don't want is one bad year to bleed into a second or a third year. If it's one bad year or a year that is deemed to be bad by whomever, fan base, media, whatever, a combination of both, what you want to make sure is that when you get into 18-19, that isn't the case. You just write it off and say, hey, it was a hiccup. It didn't work. We're doing our best to make sure it doesn't happen again. and you make sure it doesn't happen again. So it's still somewhat salvageable, but it is and has been disappointing, particularly losing to Rutgers last night in a game that, quite frankly, wasn't really that close.
Ken, then take me to their next opponent, because we won't talk to you until after they play Purdue, the number one team right now in the conference. And they are rolling. They have kicked everybody's butt. Ever since they lost those couple of games in the islands, they have really kind of found themselves. And they don't even really have to get scoring from the big guy, Isaac Haas, because they score so well from the outside. Is this the best balanced team in Purdue that you have seen in the Big Ten?
Yeah, I still think Michigan State's got better players. Okay, I think they have more future NBA players, but you know what? Right now, Purdue is better than Michigan State. There's no doubt about it. Whether you look at the standings or the eyeball test or a combination of both, Michigan State's in a funk right now, FUNK with an exclamation point. It's up to my love of my life, at least, Tom Izzo, to get it together. I think they will. I still think they're an Elite Eight team. What Purdue does, look, Painter does a great job. Okay, he's a hell of a coach. As Jim is hinting at strongly, they have really good balance between the backcourt and the bigs inside. They're well balanced because it takes more than one guy to win for Purdue. They got 3-4 guys who can do it night in, night out, afternoon in, afternoon out. So, I'd say right now, Purdue's going to win this thing in the regular season. Obviously, they'll go into the tournament as the favorite. I'd love to see a Purdue-Michigan State championship game, because obviously they are the two best teams. And if everything plays out as it should, if you believe that talent in the long run wins out, that is going to be one hell of a championship game. Or, yeah, I guess it would be. In this scenario, it would be a championship game. So, yeah, I still think Michigan State, from top to bottom, has got better players, but sometimes better players doesn't equate to better team, and right now Purdue is on a roll, and good luck Hawkeyes, or good luck anybody else trying to derail them. Will they go perfect through the conference season? Probably not. The odds are they'll have one bad game, but right now, what, they have a two-game lead on Michigan State? Well, I take that back. They're tied with Ohio State. But look, I know Ohio State's 7-0. If you watched the game last night on BTN, I think you saw a major weakness for Ohio State, and that is if you pressure them in the backcourt, they really don't have a point guard. They don't. They because of the players they lost with the coaching change, they lost a bunch of guys, and they lost a couple knuckleheads who were point guards. So if you pressure Ohio State in the backcourt, as Northwestern did in the last 3, 4, 5 minutes, I think you can get to Ohio State. So right now, the bottom line is Purdue and Michigan State are by far the two best teams. I don't care what the numbers show at this point. I think Ohio State is a mirage. This is not Ohio State football, okay? This is not 5-4 stars roaming the hallways here. These are, they got one player who's a late NBA first-round pick and a bunch of overachievers. So once they face a more athletic team, and granted, I know they beat Michigan State, but believe me, that's a puncher's chance. That was one game. That ain't going to happen again if they ever meet again. I can promise you that. So at this point, it's a two-league conference, and we all know who the two best are. And right now, Purdue is playing better than Michigan State, but I still think Michigan State's got better talent.
Ken, you're—I got to guess—you're heading out to New York City for the Super Saturday in Madison Square Garden with the Buckeyes and the Gophers, right?
What are we doing here? Why is this game scheduled? Why is it scheduled in New York City? Now, Ohio State is the second largest university in the country outside of the University of Texas. They have a very large, because they're so large, alumni base. They have a lot of folks in the New York City, New Jersey, Connecticut area that are alums. Okay, and I see some of them, not all, but some will show up. I don't know about the University of Minnesota, how many alums they have in the New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, what they call the tri-state area, okay? Why is this game being played? Why is it not being played? Why is it being played on a neutral floor. What? Why did the commissioner and his chieftain say, you know what, this is a really good idea. Let's have it at Madison Square Garden. What's the thinking behind this? Why take it away from the collegiate venue? Why take it away from campus? And I, can you explain to me, guys, why this game is being played there?
It's a
money grab.
Yeah, this is the third year that they're doing it, and Minnesota plays that night in hockey. It's building the brand in New York City.
But a money grab is great when you know it's going to work. Okay, if you're a sports fan, let's say you're not an alum, or a fan who is not an alum. Okay, now I know there are 12 million people or more in the. I think there's that many. In the metro area, if not more than 12 million, in the New York City tri-state area. Okay, but let's say I'm somebody who lives in that area, okay? Why do I want to spend my money to go see these two teams play? Unless I'm an alum or just a fan somehow of one of the two programs, for whatever reason or reasons, why am I going? Okay? On a Saturday in January to Madison Square Garden. Now, if the Knicks are playing, whomever in the NBA, they're playing the Boston Celtics, or if they're playing Golden State, yeah, I'm interested in going, okay? Well, why am I going to see Ohio State and the Golden Gophers, okay? I understand the commission's in the money grabs. I get it. Well, believe me, he is. It's well documented, okay, why certain things are done in the Big Ten, but this, to me, is really, really a reach. It just does not make, I get the hockey, I get the doubleheader thing, but even the hockey thing, you're going to draw even less because basketball normally, particularly in New York City, is more popular than hockey, and college basketball is a lot more popular than collegiate hockey in the New York City metro area. So I'm going to be real curious to see what kind of attendance they get for these two events. I get it. You're right. It is a money grab, but I think it's a very small money grab in the eyes of what they usually do conference-wise and the money that they usually get by doing what they do. This one, I get it, but I don't get it, if that makes sense.
Makes perfect sense, because we were scratching our head looking at it just the way that you just did. Ken Silverstein is our guest on the Big Talker 1700. We're talking Big Ten basketball. Ken, right now, with the way that the league is constructed, and you've talked about it being a down year with the exception of maybe a couple of teams, does the Big Ten get four, five teams into the dance, or is even that a possible stretch?
Wow, that's a great question. We've talked about it over the last couple of weeks, and obviously it ebbs and flows by the way these teams play. Obviously the big two are no-brainers. That's a question of just what numerical seeding they're going to get at this point. I think Michigan's starting to really play well. I like the win over Michigan State, particularly in East Lansing. I thought that was a really good win for Michigan. Obviously they have the two losses. One of them was a really bad loss to Ohio State when they blew roughly a 20-point lead. That one probably bothers them greatly. One, because they blew the lead, and two, was against their arch rivals. So right now, obviously, Michigan, I think, is in the mix. I'm not a buyer yet of Indiana. I think Ohio State, just because of the win total, and because Holtman's getting a lot of love nationally as Coach of the Year candidate, particularly in the Big Ten and elsewhere, I think Ohio State's going to get in. So Purdue, Ohio State, Michigan, Michigan State, that's four. Then it gets dicey. I'm still not a believer in Indiana. I'm not a huge believer in Nebraska. We're not talking Scott Frost here. We're talking hoops. Maryland's got major injuries to their best player. They're under 500 in conference. I'd say four right now, Jim and Trent, with an outside chance for a 15. But who it is? It's going to change literally after every game. It's going to ebb and flow because right now, outside of the big two and then two that are a step, more than a step below them talent-wise, you could make an argument that Indiana, Nebraska, Maryland, Minnesota, oh my goodness, Penn State, that's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I don't think it's a strong argument, but I guess you could make it a little bit. Maybe there are 5 teams vying for that 5th spot. But again, who of the 5? There's not none of them, you know, jump off the curb and say, hey, it's me. Not at this point. We've still got weeks to go, but not at this point.
Well, it's ugly in the Big Ten and, well, ugly with the team that you're covering tonight, the Cleveland Cavaliers, losers of 8 of their last 10. Ken, we'll let you roll with this. Give us a hit on the Cavs tonight. It is Orlando coming into town. And, well, a lot of talk, what they should do, what needs to be done to retool this roster.
Well, the trading deadline is 2 weeks from today, or 3 weeks from today. Excuse me, my math was wrong. 3 weeks from today, it's February 8th. They're going to do something. Who and with whom is going to ebb and flow probably more than a few times, but they're going to have to shake this thing up. Look, losing to Golden State the other night, they led at half. They played them well. They were with, I think, 3, if my memory serves me correctly, after 3 quarters. And then Golden State just wore them down. They need to get younger. They need to get more athletic. They need to win tonight against a bad Orlando team. Oklahoma City is here. That'll be interesting Saturday afternoon. I want to say that's a 2:30 Central start. So that'll be Carmelo and Paul George and some guy named Russell Westbrook coming to town. That'll be entertaining. They need to start winning some games and stop finger-pointing. This is a veteran club, and they usually have January swoons around here. The weather gets bad and their play gets bad. Is it worse now than it has been over the last couple years? I don't know. I think it's about the same. I was a little surprised by how public they were after the Golden State game with some of the Colts that went national. That surprised me a little bit. But the big question, the only question that matters is what is LeBron James thinking about, okay, and how this is affecting him because he's a free agent come July 1st. And I don't know. Nobody knows. He doesn't know at this point. At least I don't think he does. And if he does know, it could change numerous times between now and July 1st because he's a human being, and better yet, he's LeBron James, and he does have a way of changing his mind quite often. But as of this conversation, I think he's going to leave. Now, where? I was going to take a guess, and this is strictly a guess. I have no idea, and nobody else knows. But if I was advising him, and he wanted to leave, and titles are the only thing he's thinking about, because money is important, but it's not the sole thing. He's tight with Chris Paul. He loves Chris Paul. Chris Paul's one of his guys. Maybe Houston to join the beard, James Harden, Chris Paul, and maybe go to Houston. We'll see. I mean, that's just something I've been thinking about over the last few weeks. It makes sense, at least to me, but he's not going to ask my opinion what he should do, but that's just thinking out loud here. Again, doesn't mean I'm right, doesn't mean I'm wrong. I'm probably wrong because the odds are not in my favor, but I'd say right now he's leaning towards leaving unless this thing turns around quickly and they get to the finals, and if they don't win, come very close. They'd have to play Golden State to at least 6 or 7 in my mind and be very competitive, and right now I don't think they can beat Golden State. They might get one game if they're lucky.
Kenny, it's always good when we catch up with you. Great info as always. You have a good weekend, okay?
We'll talk to you next Thursday, guys.
See ya. Ken Silverstein, Big Ten Conference insider, and a little conversation since he's based in Cleveland on the Cleveland Cavaliers as well. Trent, look, this is interesting right now as we continue our conversation on the Big Ten quickly. And he's right. Look, I know you all, your go-to line, and I get it, is they got to fill 68 spots.
Mm-hmm.
So they got to take somebody. So we keep thinking 4 or 5 teams maybe from the Big Ten. It may come down to, because there aren't a lot of good mid-majors this year, that the Big Ten might get 6, maybe 7 teams in just because they got to fill spots.
Yeah, but you got to build a resume, and these teams are not going to be able to build a resume. I mean, who do you like after I feel like four are pretty solid. Of course, Purdue, Michigan State, and then Ohio State, Michigan. Those four are in really good shape. After that, who can even build a resume? Maryland could, but they're 0-6 now against the top group of the RPI. 0-6. And they're injured. And Jackson's not coming back this year. And that team has problems. We know about the issues with Minnesota. Nebraska struggled in the non-conference. They got to find quality victories. Indiana has some awful losses there. Penn State has some awful losses. Wisconsin was a train wreck. Rutgers is Rutgers. Northwestern, Iowa, Illinois. There's nobody there, Jim. There's nobody there. You have to build a resume. And these teams are not going to be able to build a resume. What it's going to help, though, I believe, the down nature of the Big Ten this year, the down nature of the Pac-12, you're going to see the SEC is, I think, a great example. The SEC, trying to make headway of how this thing's going to wrap up, I have no clue. But Kentucky, Florida, Auburn, Alabama, Missouri, Tennessee, Arkansas, and Texas A&M, both those teams are towards the bottom of the conference, but they've done enough. We could see upwards of 8, 9, maybe 10 teams from the SEC, which has been, over the last 5 years, so down, but everybody's jumbled together there. The Big 12 very well could have 7, 8, maybe even 9 teams that could find their way in there if these teams, because every win that you get, for the most part, is a quality victory. I think more than anything, that's what you're going to see, because you're right. There just aren't a whole lot of mid-majors that are going to be able to build a resume good enough to get in. You got to get to 68. And the Big Ten, it's not going to be 5 or 6 teams, Jimmy B, or 6 or 7 teams, because those teams can't build a resume. All those teams are going to be in a difficult spot to build a resume good enough. 10-8 for those other teams after the top four, it's not going to be good enough. 11-7, maybe. Might even have to be 12-6 for some of them. You have to get victory somewhere, but if they're all jumbled there, I think you're going to see 4 from the Big Ten this year. Jimmy B, what's on tap for you tonight? What do you got going on?
Come on, man. You know me. I'm going to be locked and loaded on some college basketball this evening, and I will peruse, as you well know, some of the action on the NBA. But I don't know, Trent. This is a difficult situation, but at least on national TV tonight, your new NBA favorite, the Minnesota T-Wolves, are playing in Houston, and the Beard is expected back in the lineup following that hamstring injury. The game's on TNT, so I will most likely sample that game without much of a problem. I'll probably take a look at Michigan and Nebraska as well in the Big Ten.
Yeah.
You going there too? Yeah.
A chance for Nebraska to continue to build on that resume. Maybe they are that fifth team, but they got to win games like that. We get St. Mary's Gonzaga tonight. Looking forward to that.
Yes.
So,
and there's a guy that you need to keep an eye on too from St. Mary's, the center, Jock Landale. He's an Aussie. And this kid can really play. Jock Landale is his name. Legit 6'11 kid. Good player.
Averaging a double-double this season. I'll be watching him tonight against the Zags. That'll do it for the show today. Everybody out there listening, we appreciate it. We will talk to you again tomorrow starting at noon. Myself and Ken Miller from noon until 2, and then Jimmy B and TC from 4 until 6 o'clock. Have a good night, everybody.